From the studios of WFPL in Louisville, this is a news special on the race for Kentucky governor. I'm Rick Howlett. Our guest today is independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith. Mr. Galbraith is a Lexington-based attorney who has run for various Kentucky political offices, including governor, attorney general, agriculture commissioner. He's also been a candidate for Congress. Welcome to the program, Mr. Galbraith.
Thank you so much, Rick, for inviting me on. I really appreciate being here.
Good to have you. Next week, we'll be joined by Republican nominee David Williams. The Democratic nominee, incumbent Governor Steve Beshear, has declined our invitation to appear here.
Well, imagine that. I can't hardly believe that.
Well, Mr. Galbraith will be questioned by WFPL political editor Philip Bailey, but we also want to hear from you. Call us toll-free, 1-877-814-TALK. That's 1-877-814-8255. You can send us an email at news@wfpl.org. You can send us a tweet, WFPL News. We're also on Facebook. And we also want to extend a welcome to those of you joining us on WEKU Radio in Richmond. Now I'll turn it over to my colleague, WFPL political editor, Philip Bailey. Philip?
Thanks, Rick. Mr. Galbraith, how you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I hope I didn't start editorializing too quickly on that. It was just such a shock that Mr. Beshear is actually ducking the people of Kentucky again. I can't believe the man just doesn't have it in him.
Well, I know that you've been noted as saying you're a perennial candidate because Kentucky has perennial problems. What made you decide to run this year?
Well, you know, I've always given total concentration and focus on whether I was going to run any particular race or not. I just don't try to do it willy-nilly. But this time, strategically, it's the very best time ever. You know, I've always been an independent spirit. The parties have frozen me out any time I ever tried to put my ideas through the party apparatus. The disgust on the current situation politically in the state of Kentucky is just so vast and broad and deep. The dysfunctionality of the way of doing things in the state is more apparent now to everybody than it's ever been before. The rise of the Tea Party showed me that the middle class and the silent people out there had enough themselves. You know, I went to one of the Tea Party rallies over in, and I go to Republican rallies and Democratic rallies too. I mean, I want votes from all. But I went to one of them, and they said, a Tea Party, and they said, thank you for joining us, Gatewood. And I said, what do you mean? And thank you all for joining me. Where the hell you been the last 30 years? You know, I was the one been standing out here in traffic having old big yellow signs telling you what they were doing to you, and I'm glad that you all finally caught up with us. So it's the sense that time is, you know, 30 years ago, they said, Galbraith, you're 30 years ahead of your time. And well, here it is, and it's now. And I just believe that an independent, that everybody recognizes that the parties are the problem. They've got gridlock up there. The partisanship just trumps everything. And so they're ready for an independent, which I'm well suited to be, to get up there and try to untie that Gordian knot, not caring who gets credit for getting the job done.
Now, you tap into that general frustration with the two-party system. I think we hear that at all levels of government, whether the local, state, or federal level. But that hasn't really translated into a lot of success for third-party candidates or independent candidates. How do you explain that in Kentucky? Because there clearly is a stream of that sort of railing against both parties that you hear from voters. But why haven't third-party candidates or independents been more successful in races?
Well, because of the non-participation of the people who sit out there and gripe but don't go to the polls. You know, we're getting, what, 20% and 30% turnout in these races, and some of it has to do with the way both parties have got the election laws set up where you can't register within the last 30 days of a campaign. You know, when a lot of people finally become aware there is a campaign going on, you know, we've dispossessed the entire state within 30 days of the campaign both parties have just monopolize the political apparatus and system here. In order to get on the ballot for governor, you got to get 5,000 signatures. I mean, I don't mind that. That's a little many, but I mean, I understand you having to set yourself apart, but they just don't make it easy for alternative parties or people to get into it. Money triumphs everything. They've got the list of the big special interest contributors. Unless some independent who has a thick bank account on their own comes in, it's hard to match them dollar for dollar. But now I've been at it for so long, and I've talked in so many places that I've got the name recognition that allows us to bypass the necessity of spending money on name recognition. And at this point, my running mate and I are absolutely monopolizing the social media, so we're able to bypass a lot of the old restrictions that would have kept us from being heard and kept us from getting the message out by going on the Internet and Facebook and getting the message out there. a tremendous amount of political networking that goes on there, and we've tapped into that.
I guess, but even with the Tea Party, you saw Rand Paul, he had to run as a Republican. But what's been the strategy that you've adopted this year to break through to voters, to get your message out there that's been different from previous races that you've run?
Okay, well, first of all, we go through a bullet list of what is wrong with Kentucky. We can't fund Medicaid. We can't fund teachers or state employees' pensions. We can't fund education. My running mate and I believe we know where that money is going and that we don't need to raise taxes in order to implement the kinds of policies and changes and programs that we'd like to implement. But the big thing is that everybody now recognizes that a dysfunctionality exists at both the federal and state level. And the common answer to that and the common description of it is that neither party can produce a candidate, can disengage from the partisanship long enough to work with the other side to get the job done. And that kind of bitter divide, which showed itself at the federal level with the deficit ceiling, that kind of party dogma, that kind of draw the line that you can't cross it, you're either black or white or rich or poor or something like that, no middle ground whatsoever. That kind of dysfunctionality and that kind of vituperation has just turned off a lot of people who do cast votes. And they see that the parties got their horns locked up like two bull elk fighting over territory while the business of people lays dead in the dust. And as independents, they recognize that only an independent who doesn't care who gets credit for doing what's right stands the best chance of untying that knot and getting both sides to join in on some sort of middle-of-the-road compromise that lets this government work, both on a federal and a state level. What you saw in Washington, D.C., that's what goes on in the budget discussions up here in Kentucky every time. Three special sessions we've had to have in the last 8 years in order to get a budget passed. That's dysfunctionality. That's unconstitutional. And people just don't trust the parties to reverse course and able to work with the other side to get the job done.
Let's talk about some of those issues that you want to untie. I know that one of the things that's near and dear to your heart is education. Kentucky unemployment, though, is 9.5%. And you have said that job creation begins with education. So let's start there. You've proposed a tuition freeze for all public universities. And we've seen the maximum increase over the last few years. What has that, done to the access of higher education?
Well, along with free trade, which destroyed the middle class and the manufacturing base in the state of Kentucky, from which we got a lot of students, the parents were able to help out a little bit, able to say, hey, we're successful working with our hands. We want you to get college education. Free trade has destroyed that. Kentucky's lost hundreds of thousands of jobs due to that. And over the last 2 years, we've lost 94,000 jobs. Mr. Beshear could talk about, promoting employment, but he's lost 94,000 jobs if he's the one who's taking credit or blame for it. We are not going to. Let me lay out what our students and our young folks are looking at right now as far as employment goes. We have a thing called the Council for Economic Development. These are the people who give out tax incentives to get jobs to locate here in the state. Let's talk jobs, because we can educate our kids, maybe, but if they don't have jobs here, what is the point of that education? He said that these are the ones who give out tax incentives to get jobs located here. Gene Strong, the head of it, said in 1993, I have a plan for every Kentuckian. By the year 2012, 80% of Kentuckians are going to be earning $8 an hour. How do you like it so far? I mean, who's going to buy the houses? Who's going to buy the cars? Who's going to start the families? If we can't do that, there go the auto workers, and there go the carpenters, too. That's been your official tax-supported institutional job growth policy in this state for the last 25 years. So what is the value of an education if that's what every high school graduate is going to look forward to, getting out of high school? At the same time, the Council for Post-Secondary Education says it wants to double the number of bachelor degrees in the next by the year 2020. What are they, the $8.50 an hour jobs? Let's elevate our gaze. Let's talk in these terms. We're not going to attract any jobs in the state unless we have a trained or trainable workforce for the people who get the job done. Right now, our education system is failing us. We're throwing a lot of money in for a lot of various things, but I have put together a program over the last 40 years that I think will work. Without raising taxes a penny, by just taking the tax dollars we already have, we can give every high school graduate in the state of Kentucky a $5,000 voucher for books, tuition, and fees to any institution of further learning in the state of Kentucky that will train them into employability. It's time we start talking about further education for everybody, not just higher education for a few. And there's no pizza rent or beer attached to this. It's for books, tuition, and fees to truck driving school, cosmetology school, UK, UL, Spencerian College, Bluegrass Technical College, any certified course that will train them into an employability or skill. And they got 10 years to spend this $5,000. They don't have to spend it all at one time, and we'll be riding herd on what people can charge, you know, for the training programs. It ought to do many, many things. Number one, it ought to invite in worker training and into the state programs and emerging industries into the state. It ought to invite them in poor counties because they don't have to locate in populous counties to try to draw from a general population. They got a specific target operation in that county of all those graduating seniors. So it ought to get some job programs into some of the poorer counties. We recoup it back in taxes, and a lot of it because it's spent in Kentucky. It gives these poor kids in these poor counties and in some of the networks here in Louisville, you know, some of the poor school districts here, some vision beyond a high school diploma besides the fact that they don't have to go to school any longer or they get their driver's license. It sponsors conversations around a supper table about son or daughter, what are you going to do once you get out of high school? You've got this. We're not able to give you anything, but you got this. Makes that high school diploma really worth something in dollar value so that we ought to be able to strengthen the underlying curriculum beneath it in order to get folks to, you know, want to take part in it. It gives hope to those C&D students out there who want to go into woodworking and truck driving and, you know, metallurgy and those kinds of things. And the really beautiful part about it is that not $1 gets spent until that student presents themselves at the place to be in their training. There's no advanced dollar that's spent on it. You enroll, you show up, they take your voucher, they take their fee, they take their books out of stuff, give you back the voucher, and that's when the first dollar gets spent is when you're there to get trained. It's not like building a $100 million building and trying to entice people into the curriculum. So it ought to promote employment, it ought to strengthen the education, it ought to enrich the educational experience. And in addition to that, we want to give every eighth grader in the state of Kentucky a laptop computer. Give it to them. Let them take it home. Let them work it. It's theirs. Chile did that. They've got them down there where you can throw them against the wall and it won't break them. People said, you're trying to emulate Chile's educational policy. And I said, no, but a good idea is a good idea. We need to Wi-Fi the state. We need to give every eighth grader a laptop computer to take home. They're going to show their siblings how to use it. Their siblings going to show them how to use it. They're going to show their parents that. It's going to quintuple the educational enrichment opportunities of every household in the state. So those are our ideas. We can do that. No extra taxes whatsoever. The whole total cost of that whole thing right there is $350 million a year for both those programs. We subsidize the coal operations $150 million a year in the state. You know, there's plenty of money up there. We could fund those if we want to put it in the right direction.
But I know that when it comes to this issue of freezing tuition, I mean, many colleges and universities say to that how do you fund research development? How do you attract a high-quality faculty? Would you increase their budgets? Or are you asking them to make certain cuts in order to fund that?
No, but I want them to freeze where their budget is right now because I think it's too high right now. This unbridled ego of Lee Todd up here at the University of Kentucky has cost the educational system hundreds of millions of dollars while he's up there in his playground. They've done, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of capitalization and building construction on the university, and they say that they need another billion to build what's up there. No, bull, listen. That's not a top 20 research university. It wasn't set out to be. It's got a mission. It's a land-grant college just to educate the kids. Now, I've got a proposal that we ought to take a look at. I would love to audit the University of Kentucky and its relationship with corporations who come in there and utilize tax-supported facilities in order to produce and develop new products that they go out and make a profit on while the taxpayers of Kentucky subsidize the research. You know, if they want to use our labs and, you know, we want to build stuff for research, they can sign a contract with us. Any product that they develop off of utilizing the tax-supported universities, we get an endowment fund and we get a percentage of the profits that are made off of it. Now we're cooking, you know. Now we have that part of the university there which offers educational opportunities, but our main focus ought to be educating the kids. They need to be warriors. They need to understand the system. They need to know that they're in competition employment-wise with people halfway around the world that work all day for a bowl of rice and a mat to sleep on. You know, we need to prepare our kids out there for the new world order and global economy.
1-877-814-TALK is our number if you have a question or a comment for independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith. 1-877-814-8255. You can also send us an email at news@wfpl.org, a tweet at WFPL News, or you can go to our Facebook page. And we have a caller here. Elaine in Lexington has been holding, so let's put Elaine on the line here. Hi, Elaine. You have a question for Mr. Galbraith.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say I'm glad to see you on the ticket, and you have so much insight and so many ideas. I'm glad you speak fast and clear. And so along those lines, I'd like to know what your priorities are going to be. You have several favorite issues that are near and dear to your heart? And first of all, are you going to have time to address those when you're dealing with all the day-to-day business that the governor has to deal with? And if so, what will be your priority, what you'll try to implement first?
Thank you so much. That's an excellent question. The first thing, my running mate, and by the way, I have a wonderful running mate named Dee Riley. She's the only lady in the race, extremely smart, a marketing director. She's going to do a great deal. She's actually going to fill the office of lieutenant governor. And I'm glad to see women in leadership positions. She's got six children, two of them adopted. One of her natural children has special needs. They're grown up now, and she knows where rubber meets the road on women and children's issues. But the first thing is she and I agree we need to do is reestablish trust and integrity into the process itself. You know, there are so many good-minded, well-intentioned people who won't even take part in the political process now because it's so mean-spirited and vituperative and partisanship-driven. You know, we need to be attracting capable, well-balanced, intelligent people who understand we're all in a social compact together to come in and help run the business of the state. So trust and integrity is the first thing we need to do through honesty and transparency and accountability. The second thing that we need to do is to look at ways to take the government out of the private lives of its citizens. You know, we've become, and I've said this before, we've become a bloated police state. It's not a conservative law and order philosophy when you have a bloated police state. I mean, I look at Mitch McConnell and Newt Gingrich as aliens. I don't look at them as conservatives. They've never seen a bloated police state budget they didn't embrace and call it the law and order philosophy. That's not right. You know, the government can be smaller. We can have less taxes if we get the government out of the private lives and recognize the sovereignty and the dignity of all of us as individual citizens. Before this country came along, everybody was property. We all belonged to the local king or queen or warlord, whoever had the most gunpowder in the valley. And if they said off with my head, there went my head. But our founding fathers in the implementation of this nation recognized that we were all endowed by our creator with inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the first time human beings were lifted out of the category of property and put into a sovereign human being status. The first time ever. And just that a government ever recognized. So then they put the Constitution in, which codified that view of human beings. And ever since that time, that Constitution has been toyed with and tweaked by special interests to impinge upon that property of decision-making that was left to us as individuals. And so I'm interested in seeing what kind of a cleaner, smaller, more efficient government can be fashioned out of the policy of respect for the individual. I'm not soft. Please don't take my desire to implement civility and statesmanship into the process. That doesn't make me soft in any respect. I still have a Marine mentality about many things. But the fact is that people say, Galbraith, you know, you say you're a conservative. You listen to Hannity and Limbaugh. And I said, no, I listen to Washington and Adams and Jefferson and Franklin. Those are the voices I hear inside my head. And I'm going to try to see if their knowledge and their smartness, their intelligence, they were all geniuses. We can look to them for answers to present-day problems, and I think they exist there. My Commonwealth incentive is big. We're against mountaintop removal. Dee and I are the only ticket that is against mountaintop removal. That is just too burdensome and costly and devastating method of extracting coal. We're not against coal. I was at tailgating at UK one time. Somebody says, are you coal or are you green? And I said, do I have to be one or the other? Can I be both? Isn't there a fine balance we can reach? And not only coal and environment, but all this, the competing interest groups in the state. Instead of being winner take all, you know, aren't there methods of negotiation and civility and sit down and let's work it out and see if we can achieve some sort of a balance here to all the problems? I think that's the only way we're going to make any kind of inroads towards the perennial problems that partisanship has created for us.
All right, Elaine, thanks for your call. 1-877-814-TALK is our number if you have a question or comment for Mr. Galbraith. 1-877-814-8255. We're going to take a break. You're listening to a news special with independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith from the studios of WFPL in Louisville.
Support for WFPL comes from Kentucky Opera, offering an added performance to the Brown-Forman 2011-2012 season opener. Hilliard Lyons Carmen this Friday at 8. Tickets at 584-7777 or kyopera.org. From the Habitat for Humanity Restore, whose second location is now open in Hikes Point Plaza. Restore turns your donated building material, furniture, tools, and appliances into home ownership here in Louisville. More about donations and volunteer opportunities at 805-1416 or LouisvilleRestore.org.
Good afternoon. You're listening to a WFPL News special, a conversation with independent candidate for governor of Kentucky, Gatewood Galbraith. And coming up later on Point, scientists clocked neutrinos moving faster than the speed of light. If it's true, it changes everything. We'll take a closer look at their experiment. That's coming up this afternoon on Point, here on 89.3 WFPL.
From the studios of WFPL in Louisville, we are back with our news special on the race for Kentucky governor. We're joined today by independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith. And if you have a question or comment for Mr. Galbraith, call us at 877-814-TALK. That's toll-free, 1-877-814-8255. You can also send us an email at news@wfpl.org, a tweet at WFPL News, and we're also on Facebook. And now I'll turn it back over to my colleague, Philip Bailey. Philip?
Mr. Galbraith, you mentioned before our break, you're against mountaintop removal. In fact, you're the only candidate in the race for governor that is against mountaintop removal, but you said that you're not against coal necessarily. I was wondering, if elected, will you continue to pursue Governor Beshear's lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency?
No, I will not. I will not. You know, there are laws on the books that if they were actually enforced, might have saved the lives of those 29 miners down there in West Virginia. You know, we've got laws on the books, and they're there for a reason, to protect our people. The government has a right in protecting people, and the government has a right in taking a look at situations where people's lives are at risk in hazardous duty kinds of situations. And Lord knows coal mining is a hazardous duty situation. And they have the right to make sure that certain rules and regulations are followed. So, no, I wouldn't continue that suit against them. But, you know, look, I've got deep miners who are on our side, even though knowing that it's our stand on mountaintop removal, because it's their homesteads and their streams that are being destroyed, too. And mountaintop removal destroys mining jobs. I mean, because you've got big, huge machines replacing the human miner. So, you know, it's only those people who are actually making the big profits off of mountaintop removal are in favor of it. And anybody who ever sees the environmental destruction up there must understand, you know, what the situation is. And plus, those coal companies hadn't done a darn thing to invest in the social infrastructure up there. And that's the most economically devastated region of the entire country, of the 23 counties up in Appalachia. So don't tell me what the coal companies are going up there doing about promoting employment. They got a few thousand jobs up there, but mostly they've been a vampire and sucked the life out of the system up there in Appalachia.
What role then should the federal government play in protecting Kentuckians from, I guess, air and water pollution? Because given the coal industry's political influence in the state, can the state be expected to adequately regulate that industry?
Depends on who's in the governor's office, I'd say. You know, that's where it's at. The governor's office is where it stops. That's where the buck stops on this right here. And Governor Beshear getting up there and say, EPA, get off our backs, you know, is just, I mean, he's a corporate shill. He's up there for the millionaire. He's also come out and lobbied on behalf of payday lenders who charge these poor people out here 460% interest on these payday loans. You know, it's he stopped it. He's trying to cap it at 36. They tried to this last session. He stopped that from happening. So he's not on behalf of the working people, the little guy. He's in there to give his fat cat cronies, you know, as much of the tax dollars as they can siphon off. So, no, I wouldn't. There's a lot of things I'm going to reverse on Mr. Beshear because they're for the big guy, and they leave the little guy out of the equation.
Many energy alternatives have been discussed in relation to coal. There are other opportunities or other energy options for the state to pursue. Are you supportive of lifting the ban on nuclear power plants?
Not right now, not at present. I think we have other ways to try to produce it that are uniquely Kentucky. First of all, we've got a lot of gas. We've got as much natural gas as just about anywhere in the country. And we ought to be thinking in terms of, you know, producing gas energy. I'm not looking for anything to replace coal. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we can continue to burn coal until the cows call the cops, as long as we, you know, continue to improve the smog reduction and that we don't extract it through, you know, destructive means. So I'm not against the coal industries. I mean, they can make their money. I want to move into gas also, and hemp as a biofuel. Now, you know, for 30 years, I've been talking about hemp as a biofuel, cannabis, marijuana as a biofuel. It turns out that you get 20 barrels of petroleum off an acre of hemp. And, you know, if you planted 7% of the U.S. agricultural land in hemp, you wouldn't have to import another drop of oil. So our farmers are being denied a niche in the biofuel market. Hemp is far superior to corn. You don't need flatland pesticides, herbicides, or fertilizer to grow it. We should be planting hemp from stem to stern and try to get into the biofuel market, which would allow us to become an energy capital of the world.
Okay, along those lines, let's go to the phones. Greg in Louisville has been waiting. Hi, Greg, you're on the program with Mr. Galbraith.
Mr. Galbraith, I'm just wondering what your views are now on the legalization, decriminalization of marijuana.
Yes, sir. I am legalization. I'm not for the legalization. And let me distinguish that. Tomatoes are legal, and an 8-year-old can stand on the street corner and eat a tomato. I don't want that to happen. I want it to be licensed and regulated, just like alcohol and tobacco, with the ability of a person to grow their own plants in their own home. I do not want any criminal statutes attached to it. On the other hand, I don't want corporations involved in it. I don't want Friday night sales. I don't want clearances, offers. I don't want golden arches. I don't want any kind of advertising encouraging people to smoke it. I want to get it into the hands of every sick and dying person in the state of Kentucky as a medicine. I believe not only will bring pain relief and happiness to a lot of sick people, but I think it will cut the cost of health care in this state from between $500 million and $1 billion a year. I represent a lot of people across the state who get caught growing their own medicinal medicine, and they've got bulging discs and 15 prescriptions on anything from OxyContin to Demerol to Xanax to Lorset and Lortab. And, you know, they say they can do away with every one of those pills if they have some good marijuana to smoke, in their own home. So I think we can get rid of a lot of pharmaceutical overload. I know it will bring pain relief. 30 years ago, they said, Galbraith, you're 30 years ahead of your time. But now 18 other states agree with me. The American Medical Association agrees with me. Harvard and Yale have studies that show that it eats up, destroys lung tumors, eats it up. I showed that to Dr. Grady Stumbo, who headed up the Democratic Party one time. And he says, Galbraith, just because Harvard and Yale say it doesn't mean that I have to believe it. So, that's a hell of a way to set policy for the state. So it's time for a lot of problems in the state of Kentucky, covering a vast array of things. It's time that we started trying to make our policy judgments based on science and truth instead of fears, lies, propaganda, and partisanship.
Do you still smoke marijuana?
Yes, I do. All day, maybe even want to do is become an attorney and choke the hell out of all the Nazis I ever come across in this lifetime.
Well, let me ask, I guess, the advocacy, when you said earlier about not legalizing marijuana, it seems that you're more positioned to treat it like alcohol, that it should have an age limit on it, that it should be legal in a sense that people can purchase it, but not necessarily just available to children and everyone else.
Absolutely correct. There is a huge underground economy running right beside us, standing in the shadows, and that's the illicit drug market. And I think if we ought to stop spending law enforcement dollar after going after the marijuana smoker and the marijuana aficionado, and take that law enforcement dollar and go after the really hard and dangerous stuff, the cocaine, the methamphetamine, these kinds of things. But I don't think we ought to criminalize everybody associated with it. I'm tired of making criminals out of people who are possessors of it. These people need drug treatment and counseling instead of putting them in jail. So I'm for taking the law enforcement out of a lot of this drug problem and put it over to drug treatment.
Let's go out to Christian County. Joey has a question kind of along those lines. Hey, Joey, you're on the program. You have a question for Mr. Galbraith?
Yes, sir, Mr. Galbraith. I own a liquor store here in Christian County, and I real close to Fort Campbell. Had a young soldier come in, ordered a beer. I carded him. He was 20 years old, going to be 21 in October. He was missing half his knee, and I asked him what happened to him, and he had been hit by an IED. And I felt really, really foolish. And I just wondered what your position would be on allowing people with an active duty military ID card the option to purchase liquor at any age, as long as they have an active duty ID card.
Sir, I'm absolutely totally in your corner on that. I was as a child, I was very asthmatic and in and out of the hospital a lot. And I was 4F when it came time for the draft. But I didn't want to be that way. I wanted to serve, so I got a couple of doctors to write letters saying I'd outgrown my asthma. And I got into Marines and went down to Parris Island. And they had just cut the training period from 14 weeks down to 9 weeks. And 6 weeks into training, I had an attack of asthma and got discharged honorably under medical conditions. But my heart has always been there, there with the people I served those brief 6 weeks with. My heart's totally with the military. I hate to see us in a no-win war situation like we're in right now, But by golly, if he can go out there and put his butt on the line, to put his life on the line and perhaps have to make the ultimate sacrifice, he ought to be able to drink a damn beer. And so I'm with you on that. At any age, if they're in the service, they ought to be able to drink a beer.
There's a question from Facebook. Joe wants to know, when's the last time you did smoke marijuana?
The weekend, this past weekend. But I smoke whenever it's appropriate. You know, I might smoke again tomorrow. I don't know. Just, you know, if the opportunity presents itself and it's not going to interfere with anything I do, you know.
I noticed that you have a mix of libertarian and progressive views. I want to talk a little bit about gun rights and your views on the Second Amendment. The group Kentuckians for the Right to Bear Arms has endorsed your candidacy. I'd like to ask, should the state continue to allow people to openly carry firearms in the state capitol?
I don't think they can keep it from it. I think it's a constitutional right. Now, yeah, I don't own a lot of guns, but I have a couple. I have enough what I think I need to protect myself. But I've had endorsement of the Gun Owners of America in all my past races. I'd get it now if I really make a call up there and ask them for it. I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I represent people who have committed crimes against other people, and they just don't go after anybody that they think is armed. You know, they always go after the people that they think they don't have any problem with. And in all the states where they have carried concealed deadly weapons, violent crime goes down. So, you know, the people, the criminals are mostly cowards. They're looking for people that they're either bigger than, or, you know, they're quicker or younger or what have you, and they don't expect to meet any resistance. Two of my three daughters have weapons, and, I encourage them. I meet a lot of women who are out in sales, in real estate, in ad sales. They go out to meet a client. They don't know who they're going to go meet or, you know, who's going to meet them out at that house. I know a lot of them who carry concealed. Because they need it for their protection. So I am an advocate. As a matter of fact, I wrote my autobiography, The Last Free Man in America, and I'm standing on the front cover holding an M60 with 400 rounds across my chest. People say, Gavis, why have you got that on your front cover? I said, because I'm a serious man. And I am.
1-877-814-TALK is the number to call if you have a question or comment for independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith. 1-877-814-8255. Let's go out to Eastern Kentucky and Clay County and David. Hi, David. You're on the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mr. Galbraith, kudos on your Second Amendment position. I think you gave a great answer.
Thank you, Dave.
I just want to address some things you said about mountaintop removal. Is mountaintop removal the only type of surface mining that you're opposed to?
No, sir. That's, of course, the most dramatic. I realize that there's strip mining up there and the high walls and contours and that. I'm not against that type of mining if the laws that are currently in place right now are adhered to.
Okay, well, let me. The state of Kentucky since 1995 has only issued 8 bona fide pure mountaintop removal permits. The state of Kentucky has not issued a mountaintop removal permit since 2006. Now, there's this perception out there that every dang surface mine is a mountaintop removal mine. It's not.
I know that.
Kentucky has done very few. Kentucky has permitted almost 450,000 acres of surface mines since SMACRA was passed in the late 70s. Of that 450,000 acres, only a little over 4,100 acres have been bona fide mountaintop removal mines. And one of the problems in this rhetoric about mountaintop removal is there's no distinguishing between a mountaintop removal mine and just flat, straight surface mining.
Right.
And we got to be really careful about that because most of the environmentalists and people that are screaming about it, they don't know what they're talking about. And it's okay, you don't like mountaintop removal. Congratulations, you won. Next. There hadn't been one in 5 years, you know?
Right.
But now people want to run around bayoneting the wounded.
Well, no, I understand that. And you're absolutely right. And I'm glad that you're forcing those distinctions upon us. There are, in fact, a specific category called mountaintop removal rather than the strip mining and the surface mining. I realize that those permits need to continue because we need to extract coal. It's just that the visuals on mountaintop removal and the destruction and overload into the streams and valleys is just much more vivid. And it politically, it's a catchy way to go about it. But the fact is, we need to mine coal responsibly. I realize that strip mining or surface mining is an allowable practice, But that doesn't mean that I'm not committed to make sure that the laws regarding it and the reclamation regarding it is practiced and followed.
But as a follow-up to that caller's question, I mean, the coal industry employs fewer people than it used to. It's still a large employer in many counties.
Well, it really isn't. Relatively speaking, yeah, it is. But you know, that's maybe 7,000 or 8,000 miners.
But should the state, though, I mean, because this issue often is collided with environmental protections versus jobs, should the state be looking to diversify the economy of the state in some of these counties?
Well, absolutely. We'd certainly like the help of the coal companies to do it, too, since they're the ones that one of the ways we need to do that is make sure that the severance tax that's put on the extracted materials goes back to the county that it was gotten from. I mean, the legislature has been raiding that fund for all kinds of reasons, and instead of making sure that the money that comes out of that county goes back to it. So, you know, that would have done a great deal if we'd followed that practice, which was used to be the recognition. You know, they're telling what we might have been able to do for some of those counties up there. But we need to try to get tourists up there. You know, we're not the Blue Ridge Mountains, but certainly we can improve our appearance. When we drive through the Blue Ridge Mountains down there, you don't see trash piles alongside the road. You know, you don't see shacks, you know, where it looks like a little Abner. I mean, you know, certainly we should go in there and be trying to help those folks. We should also be trying to put a new face on the state of Kentucky. You know, right now, we're the laughingstock of the country in many respects.
All right. We're going to thank David for his call from Clay County and go out to Bardstown and Ashley. Hi, Ashley. You're on the air with Mr. Galbraith.
Oh, I just want to say, sir, as the daughter of a Marine, it is my honor to give you my vote, and it's a shame I only have one. I have never been in the presence of somebody who literally spoke my thoughts over the airwaves. I am so proud of you, and I am a small business owner, and I would be happy to help your campaign in any way that I can. My husband is a student for renewable biofuels, and I definitely could agree with you positively 100% that hemp is the way to go. And my son has asthma, and I know that you are going to help our air and our economy. So kudos, and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you so much, dear. You know, we're not going to get to all of the kind of things that we stand for, but we do have a pretty decent website up at gatewood.com, gatewood.com. And if you ever want to email me, it's gatewood@gatewood.com. So appreciate that. And I invite you to go to our website, and you'll see just exactly why I'm bragging about my running mate, too.
All right, Ashley, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Lawrenceburg now. And David, hi, David, you're on the air.
Kudos to you on many of your issues, your stands on issues. Where do you stand on gay rights? Would you have gay people working in government, or would you rather lock them up?
No, brother, I'm an egalitarian. You know, everybody's precious. Nobody's special. Gays are just as I mean, what can I tell you, my friend? I've got a lot of close personal friends who are gay. I hired the fellow that I think was the first openly gay person to practice law in downtown Lexington. First came into my office, I hired him because they were having trouble finding anything else. You know, I just met with the gay and lesbian folks at the Fairness Committee here in Louisville last night. I think that they were pretty well pleased with the way that interview went. I'm absolutely egalitarian. Everybody's equal, and I harbor no. I'm not xenophobic. I'm not homophobic. I'm just an American and a Kentuckian.
All right, David, thanks for your call. We're going to take another break. You're listening to a news special with independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith from the studios of WFPL in Louisville.
Support for WFPL comes from Central Bank. Central Bank can provide personal attention and professional solutions to a broad range of complex financial needs. Online at centralbank.com. In town at 499-5600. Central Bank, showing you the way. Member FDIC. From Derby Dinner Playhouse, presenting the mystery comedy Death by Fatal Murder. At the Bagshot House, an Italian gigolo, a Scottish clairvoyant, and a stuffy general find themselves knee-deep in murder, being investigated by the bumbling Inspector Pratt. Tickets at derbydinner.com or 288-8281.
And good afternoon. You're listening to a WFPL News special, a conversation with independent candidate for governor of Kentucky, Gatewood Galbraith. And coming up later on All Things Considered, we'll take a look at Texas Governor Rick Perry's presidential campaign. Just weeks ago, the darling of the GOP, now he's on the defensive, hitting the campaign reset button. That's coming up this afternoon on All Things Considered on 89.3 WFPL.
From the studios of WFPL in Louisville, this is a news special on the race for Kentucky governor, and we're talking today with independent gubernatorial candidate Gatewood Galbraith. He's being questioned by you, our callers, and we have quite a few folks waiting to get in. 877-814-TALK, that's 877-814-8255, toll-free. And he's also being questioned by WFPL's political editor, Philip Bailey, and I'll turn it back over to Philip.
I want to piggyback on the caller who just called in before the break. Does that mean, you say you're supportive of gay rights, would you, I guess, advocate in your administration to overturn the marriage amendment?
Well, I would not politic on that. If that shows if it's introduced, I would certainly not oppose it. But, I mean, I'm not going to run on that as an issue. I mean, I believe that issue would be divisive as a political issue and would have a lot of people who otherwise agree on a lot of other things fighting over it. But look, I'm not for ordinances which give gays more protections or rights than the average person. I want the same protections and rights as everybody else has. Okay, but other than that, I think we ought to. I'm not against gay marriage. I don't even want to know. You know, if people want to make that commitment to each other, that's fine with me. Right now, we have a constitutional prohibition against it. If it comes down to a referendum, depending on the wording of the referendum, I could probably support it.
Now, you said you don't want gays or lesbians or bisexual transgender individuals to have more rights. Here in Louisville, we obviously have the Fairness Ordinance that was passed in 1999.
Right.
One thing that the Fairness Campaign and other gay rights advocates across the state are trying to do is pass similar local ordinances in other cities. Are you supportive of that? And ultimately, are you supportive of a statewide fairness law that would protect LGBT citizens against discrimination in housing, employment, things of that nature?
No more so than it protects everybody else against discrimination. You know, like I say, everybody's precious, nobody's special. And there is no special category of people that deserve more protection than the other categories of people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just where it's at. I mean, I fight and die for a person's, wanting to exercise their rights as an American, the free speech, the whatever living arrangements they want to make. I mean, that's their business. I mean, that's their private life. You know, I'd fight and die to protect that right of individual privacy and individual choice. Making them a special category, no, I'm not going to do that any more than I would make women a special category. You know, I was against affirmative action because it made them a special category. I'm just that way. I'm egalitarian. I mean, look up the definition. Everybody's equal.
Let's go back to the phones. We have several people waiting to talk to Mr. Galbraith. Let's go to Kathy in Louisville. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Gatewood. How are you?
Hi. Well, Kathy, I'm still unindicted, I'm happy to report. My favorite status.
Okay, I know you're busy. I'll get right to my question.
Yes, ma'am.
This is Kathy Travis, by the way.
Oh, hello, Kathy.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we don't have an open primary. I know you support one, and I do too. As you know, I recently met with Mike and them, and I found out 33 other states have it. It seems like to me that Representative Daryl Owens has been a thorn in our side as far as on that committee. Do we have to have the same committee every time, and is there any way that this could go on a ballot for the people to vote on?
The legislature, being beset by partisanship on both sides of the aisle, is not going to offer the people any more of a voice in the electoral process than they're already offering them. And they're going to make sure it gets referred to whatever committee that is going to bury it. So it may be referred to another committee next time, but they're going to bury it just the same. The legislature is also the ones who write the wording of the referendum. For instance, California, an individual citizen can write the wording of a referendum if it gets enough signatures. That's how it appears on the ballot. But here in Kentucky, only the legislature can put the wordage of whatever referendum goes on the ballot, and I can guarantee you that they're not going to voluntarily open up the political process to any more people than they have to because they got a monopoly on the closed system that exists now.
Okay, second question, it kind of relates to it. Why does it take 50 to 5,000 signatures for us when they only have to have two? And I'm talking about the Democrats and Republicans.
Well, because they control the political process here. Think about this. The parties in their nominating process have the taxpayers pay the cost of the primary. You know, that's strictly a party situation. It doesn't concern all the rest of the citizens. All the rest of the citizens are blocked out from participation because they're not a part of that political party. And they've got us spending millions of dollars on behalf of their political party to hold the primary process. So, no, I don't think it is just another way to keep non-party members out of the political process. 5,000 doesn't sound like a lot unless you ask them all over for breakfast in the morning, and that's a hell of a lot of eggs to be scrambling one at a time. But we got the job done, and we're in now, and so we need to take advantage of being inside the belly of the beast.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Stu in Louisville. Hi, Stu, you're on the air with Gatewood Galbraith.
Yeah, hi. Louisville gets about 60 to 70 cents back on every dollar that they send to Frankfurt.
Yes.
Because of our state's dysfunctional economy and political system.
Yes.
In my opinion, the only way to fix that is to offer true casino gambling, in Louisville specifically, offering taking advantage of our historical roots as a horse racing state, which is a legalized professional sport that you gamble on. Would you support legalized professional sports gambling in Louisville and turning Churchill Downs to the next large employer in our area doing that?
Yes, I'm for legalized gambling in the state of Kentucky. I think it's a shame that a lot of money is going out of state, and I'm for a constitutional referendum. I think it has to be up to the people. But here's been my take on it thus far, and I remain to be educated in another direction if necessary. I think that we ought to. I think the state ought to own the gambling. I don't think we want to turn over to Bally or Atlantic City or Las Vegas. I think just like the Indians own their own casinos, I think the state ought to own ours. We ought to have a gaming commission. We ought to give the racetracks a management contract to conduct the casinos and conduct the gambling operations at their site so that we can keep the racetracks going. There's only one function of a thoroughbred horse, and that's to run around a track. You know, they're too expensive to eat by the pound, and they won't pull a plow. So we need to have those tracks in order to keep the breeding industry here in the state. But here's one of the things I'd really like to do. Since the state would own it and therefore have a little more control over the prostitution and the loan sharking that might normally follow something like that, is the state gets to set the rate of return for each dollar spent by the gambler. They get back a certain percentage overall to, you know, say, let's say 80%. I'm not sure what it is. Let's say 80% in Las Vegas goes back to the gambler. You know, if the state of Kentucky set it at 92, the largest in the area, we would draw every gambler from every other gambling establishment in the seven-state area and fill every one of our hotel rooms and motel rooms and restaurants to the fill 7 days a week. So, you know, I'm interested in taking a look at it from that standpoint, but it's ridiculous where the state of Kentucky, based on bourbon and horse racing and, you know, and tobacco, would sit there and have some sort of prohibition against gambling, and I'm not for that prohibition.
All right, Stu, thanks for your call. Let's go out to Lexington and Brian. Hi, Brian. You're on the air with Gatewood Galbraith.
Yes, Mr. Galbraith.
Yes, sir.
You have been running for many, many years. You know, the longtime Kentuckian, I remember seeing you here for a long time. And I always find that you have a wonderful mix of some really revolutionary ideas and some really radical ideas.
Well, thank you.
And I'm just kind of wondering if you can get past the partisan politics and actually get into office, where do you sort of see that mix go as the way Frankfurt is now, what your mix of policies, what do you see as being able to actually get through and get into law, especially looking at things like your views on health care and education reform versus, say, cannabis and biofuels and things that would maybe take some DEA reforms and things like that, the things that we can actually work with in Kentucky, what do you see getting done?
Well, that's a great question. Thank you very much for asking it. People say Galbraith as an independent, you know, how can you get anything done? First of all, since we don't care who gets credit, we don't, you know, anything that gets done that's right, they can call it the Stumbo-Williams Act, the Williams Stumble Act, we don't care. There are people in the legislature who already know how to get things passed. They just passed a penal reform bill up there that actually addressed a critical issue in the state on jail overcrowding. Both sides worked together. They came up with something that passed. That was the first time I'd seen them work in a bipartisan spirit like that in probably in the last 20 years. So I know it can be done. And since we're not partisan, whoever has a good idea in any party doesn't have to go through the leadership if they're going to continue to be gridlocked. They can come straight to the governor's office. And if it's a good idea and we implement it and it works, we'll give that individual credit, not their party, but the individual. If it doesn't work, we'll take the blame. So what we hope to do is to set both parties free and let them work their magic in the way that they're supposed to. We're not anti-party. We are pro-party. But right now, it's just like two wrestlers in a grappling. They're on the ground and neither party is moving, you know. Heck, we need to get them up, back up off the mat, get them out there and get them doing what it is they do, functioning to the greatest extent. So I expect them to get the work done. I'm just one guy. I mean, I'm actually a visionary more than I am a nuts and bolts parliamentarian. You know, but that's what we need, because we've lapsed down into parliamentarian kind of thing where it's a chess match, and we've lost sight of the big overview. You know, what we have, we need to find money to fund the Medicaid, teachers' retirement, public retirement, our education. Right now, we have a thing called the Council for Economic Economic Development, where we have what's known as the personal service contracts. For the state in 1995 spent $280 million hiring outside help to do state work. This year, it's $2 billion that the state is spending in your tax dollar hiring outside people to do state work, many of them outside the state of Kentucky. Hell, we hired Arkansas to do an economic development plan for us, and we're 47th and they're 48th. I mean, why are we spending that kind of money for? So we can reach back and take back $1 billion out of that special money that's being given over these special interests and start paying off some of the programs we're behind on, and I hope we get the cooperation of all the legislature to catch up like that.
I'd like to ask really two quick questions at the end here.
Got about a minute.
Now that we're running out of time. Governor Beshear has been criticized for what's been called a no-show strategy in recent weeks. What are your thoughts about his decision to skip certain forums?
It's an insult to every citizen in the state. They're paying him a salary. He's got responsibilities. The reason that he's unaccountable is because he won't appear out here and take responsibility for it. He's a coward.
Polls show also that Senator David Williams, the Republican in the race, having some high negative ratings at Fancy Farm. You said Mr. Williams couldn't beat Beshear, that only you could. Do you still stand by that position?
Oh, I'm in second place right now. We're widening the gap on me, Mr. Williams, and I'm catching up with Mr. Beshear. I mean, these small-town polls are having me coming in at 65 and 70%. So the big-time polls, paid for by big money, had somebody call in. Yeah, they called me, Gatewood. They said, who are you going to vote for, Williams or Beshear? And he said, I'm voting for Gatewood. And they said, okay, click. So, you know, these big-time polls, you can't trust them. They're bought and paid for.
All right, that's going to wrap it up. I wish we had more time, Mr. Galbraith, but thanks for joining us today.
Well, just one final note. If I was going to lie to you, I'd already been elected governor.
Okay, we'll end on that note. Gatewood Galbraith, independent gubernatorial candidate. A reminder that next week we'll be joined by Republican nominee David Williams. That's next Thursday. And the Democratic nominee, incumbent Governor Steve Beshear, has declined our invitation to appear on the program. This news special was produced by the WFPL news staff, our production team led by Laura Ellis and Brad Yost. For Philip Bailey, I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.
For WFPL comes from LG&E. With a reminder that keeping your AC system clean and efficient can save you money, LG&E offers an AC testing and tune-up program for homes and businesses.